I mean, I'm open about my numbers. You know, I walked away with like 1.4 last year. And, you know, I think the exciting thing about that is that also included paying myself $100,000 salary that was rolled in as being an expense. That's paying for my car. That's paying for my cell phone, a lot of dinners. So, you know, a lot of, I guess, kind of personal expenses went into, you know, the profit and loss statement as well.
This is the Platform Marketing Show, where we interview the most creative and ambitious real estate agents in the country, dissect their local marketing strategy, and get the behind-the-scenes scoop on how they're generating listing leads and warm referrals. We'll dive into the specifics of what marketing campaigns are working for them, how much they're spending on those campaigns, and figure out how they have perfected what we call the Platform Marketing Strategy. This is your host, Tim Shermack. I'm the founder and CEO of Platform. I love marketing and I talk too much. So let's dive in. Hey guys, it's Tim Shermack and welcome back to another episode of the Platform Marketing Show. I'm joined today by Angie Cole. Angie has built an incredible team of realtors in Raleigh, North Carolina. Angie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So Angie and I first got connected, I think it was back in either 2015 or 2016, and you were a very early Platform marketing client back in the day when you were more of an individual top producing realtor. Since then, Angie has built a really, really successful team, maybe the most successful team of any agent I've come across, frankly, in the United States. Angie, you can correct me on these numbers, but I just want to like set the stage for where your business is at now. Last year, your team did over 500 transactions. The volume was over $225 million. And at the end of the day, your net from all that was north of $1 million for you personally.
That is correct. Yes. And thanks for the compliments.
Yeah. I think it's really important to point out the net profit too, because obviously if anyone's ever been to a real estate conference or seminar or whatever, you always hear, oh, build a mega team like this. And you hear these really inspiring stories of people talking about things like agent count or rev share or, you know, the volume, but like very rarely whatever gets discussed is actual net income. Like, hey, are you actually making money on this at the end of the day after you set, you know, you buy, you know, $30,000 a month of Zillow ads, or, you know, how much money you have to spend into office space and lead gen and all that. And often what you find out when you have kind of these conversations in the hallways outside of a conference is that the people that are on the stage bragging about having built a huge team are barely making any more money than individual top agents who don't have all that overhead. So why I wanted to bring you on the show and kind of discuss the model and the business plan that you're using is that you've actually built a large team. I mean, how many total people are in your organization now?
Yeah, I would say around 65. And that number, I mean, honestly, it changes daily.
Sure.
Because we're actively recruiting and recruiting agents, and as we recruit agents, and we then of course need to add to the admin staff. But yeah, I would say around 65.
Yeah. So you've built a legitimate business, right? With 65 people on the team, and yet you're actually profitable. So it's not as if you're just growing the top line revenue number and it looks impressive to the public, but you're barely making any money yourself. You have a very healthy income. You're doing it the right way. And the way that you've built your business should be a model for other agents who want to build a team. And dare I say, if you're not willing to do what Angie has done, you probably just shouldn't build a team. Because
right. Well, I mean, my thing is, you know, why do we work, right? We work so we can enjoy, you know, wonderful things in life and be able to go, you know, on trips and support our family. So, you know, I don't work just to work. I work to net money, right? So then I can enjoy my life outside of work.
Yeah. And you've done exactly that. So let's rewind. What year did you first get licensed? Did you get started in real estate, Angie?
Yeah, I always remember because I was 7 months pregnant with my daughter when I was sitting through real estate school, which was quite miserable. And so she was born in 2007. And a month after she was born, I obtained my actual license. And then that summer was my first dip into real estate. And I went into new home sales. So summer of 2007.
which was a great time to get into real estate.
Oh yeah. The funny part is I was just so naive, clueless, had no idea what, direction to take, the understanding of real estate and, hey, you probably should have some money saved, and also did not understand the market that I was entering. But, you know, that was kind of I think that worked to my advantage because I was put into a new home sales neighborhood and it was, hey, these are the people that are walking through the door. Now, how are you going to sell them? Even though it was very minimal people walking through the door, I thought that was the norm.
So you just, you know, got into real estate in this kind of down depressed market of 07, 08, thinking, hey, this is normal.
Yeah.
Yep. And so when the market started to recover and get healthier, you thought this is amazing because yeah. I thought the default was that it's always going to be this hard.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that was the norm for me. So it was actually nice entering the market when it was definitely a down market.
Which I think that's really, really timely advice and perspective right now as we're recording this episode. I mean, who knows when you're listening to this, but we're recording this episode live in spring of 2023. Mm-hmm. And it sure feels like a similar situation, probably not as extreme as 2007, sure. 2008, but it's definitely not this vibrant, healthy, growing market like we saw several years ago. It's kind of just market's kind of just weird right
it's
now.
It's wonky. I was just having that conversation with one of our team members yesterday. You know, we'll have 1 week where we are rocking and rolling and the contracts are flowing in. And then the very next week, it just dies again. I do have to say, I feel like the overall market in 2023 is a little bit better than what we were expecting. You know, as 2022 was coming to an end, I think we all started to freak out because everything just took a halt, mainly because of the increase in interest rates. So, I mean, 2023 has not been bad in any way, but it's definitely a roller coaster ride for sure.
Right. So you got going in 2007. How many years were you on your own as an individual producing agent before you started to maybe have the thoughts in your mind of like, I'm going to build a team and kind of scale this? Like, when did that thought first come into your mind?
Yeah. So I started off, like I mentioned, in new home sales. I was in new home sales working directly for builders as an on-site agent for about 2.5 years. Then from there, I decided to go to general brokerage. Right out of the gates, I joined a team, wonderful team. For whatever reason, though, their ways of doing business clearly didn't align with the way that I succeed. And I wasn't selling any homes. So I was on their team for, I think, 9 months or so. And honestly, I almost got out of real estate. And because they were successful, I was not. So clearly it was a me thing. I got out of real estate for about 2 to 3 months, wasn't quite sure what to do with my life moving forward. And I had another team approach me. They were looking to hire their first buying agent. And I even told them, hey, I'm a little nervous. You know, I wasn't having luck in the past. And, you know, they were like, come on board. We see the talent. If things don't work out, we will help you to find another job. So came on board and, you know, they just ran their business with the mindset of just go sell homes. We're here to support you. We're not going to micromanage. We're not going to, you know, make you go through a specific process from start to finish. Just go sell homes. And that worked for me. And that's now how I run like our business now, because everyone excels in different ways. And there's not one perfect way of running a real estate business or working with your clients. So I joined their team, was on their team for about 3 years. And then numbers might be a little off there, but it was in October of 2013 that I decided to go off on my own. So I was still under the umbrella of Keller Williams, a big national firm, but decided to go off on my own. Reason being, just I was looking at my numbers and probably about 90 to 95% of the business I was closing was personal sphere. And so at that point, it didn't make sense to be on a team where I didn't feel like it was a win-win. And so I kind of felt pushed to go start my own thing where honestly, that was never my goal.
What a year was this?
This was in October of 2013.
Okay.
So, yep. October 2013. That's when opened the doors, A. Cole Realty, me as a single agent under the umbrella of Keller Williams. Very quickly, I would say about 3 months in, it was time to already hire an admin. I needed help. So actually, I hired my mom. She was our first hire. She was with our company for 5 years following that. And then very quickly again, it was, hey, we need an agent. I need help. So things just took off from there. And in July of 2016, we then decided to open up our own independent firm. And then we've been independent as Acol Realty ever since.
Okay. So let me take a step back and ask you, on the very first team you joined, where you said it lasted about 9 months and you just, you weren't successful there. And clearly now that you've built, you know, built a business and proven yourself as an entrepreneur that, hey, you're selling over, like literally your team is selling over 500 homes a year. Clearly Angie Cole knows how to sell real estate. So it was never an individual talent issue. What was it about that team structure or how they did business that just didn't vibe with you? Like why didn't it work out? Because the reason I ask is that story that you just described, hey, it just didn't feel right. I didn't like the way they ran their business. That is true for so many agents where they join a team or they're the ones building a team and they bring on an awesome agent and it doesn't work out. Why didn't it work out when clearly you had the talent?
Sure. Yeah. They were very by the books as far as, hey, I speak with a potential buyer client on the phone. You must bring that buyer client into the office to have a buyer consultation. The next goal is then you need to get buyer agency. And so your numbers, pretty much your closing numbers, are all based upon the buyer consultation. How many consultations, how many buyer agency agreements from there? That's how many offers you'll then write. That's how many closings you will have. It was a very, like, it must be done this way, where for me, for whatever reason, that didn't work. I live by the mindset of, hey, let me get them on the phone. Let's talk all about them. How can I help them? Let me get them out there and show them a home. And many times, you know, and I tell my team, don't even push for financial like verification. Get in front of them because they don't owe you anything. They don't know you. Why are they going to divulge all this information and feel like they have to share with you, oh, here's my proof of funds, here's my pre-qual letter? So instead, as long as I feel comfortable, you know, as far as safety, you know, concerns, I am getting them out there. I'm showing them at least one home, and then I can get in front of them and I can have that buyer consultation in front of them. Also, most of our team members on our team, they don't even have the buyer client signed buyer agency until it's time to draft the offer. And at that point, it's a requirement because, again, it's just having that relationship and that conversation of, hey, I'm working for you. You're only going to work with me. At this point, we're married, but I'm not going to get all technical and get the paperwork involved. And people just tend to love that. Now, everyone's a little bit different, but for me, that worked. And I know that it works for a majority of our agents. Now, there's some agents who like a little bit more of the structure. They like to bring a client into the office, do that formal buyer consultation, and that's how they find success. So I don't think there's a right or a wrong way. It's just whatever works best for you.
Yeah, I forget now who even told me this, but I once heard someone say, you'll have a lot more success as a real estate agent if you treat every potential client as if they're your cousin. And I think that's a really interesting mental model, because if you think of brother or sister, it's like, well, that's almost too familiar, where you probably would never have them sign paperwork or anything like that. But most people's cousin, it's like, well, if your cousin's buying a house, you're probably not going to lead with like, hey, I need you to sign a buyer agency paperwork right away. We need to get you, you know, I'm gonna introduce you to a mortgage lender, get you pre-qualified. You probably will be willing to show your cousin a house or two before you start talking details and finances and paperwork. And I just think that's a really useful mental model because, yeah, I mean, just treat people like humans.
Yeah. But you're also not scared to educate them and share with them, hey, don't cheat on me. Like in a funny way. And there's a way to spin that conversation where you're really almost in a sense presenting that buyer agency agreement without having them sign, you know, but you're also, you know, sharing and educating on the advantages of, you know, hey, what am I going to do to you, do for you? Why you shouldn't go to these third-party websites like Zillow or Realtor.com. Stick with me. Let me help you. So it's all about the conversation. But yeah, I agree with you. Kind of treat it like a cousin relationship.
Yeah, like after there's like momentum created in the relationship, then you can get into all that stuff. So
yeah, you got to show your worth. Yep.
So this is happening in 2013. And yes. Then you went on your own fully with Acol Realty in 2016?
That's correct. July, 2016. Yeah, we already had the team name, but we were under the umbrella of Keller Williams, but we decided to go independent.
Yep. What was the reasoning behind why you decided to go independent? Because I think every agent listening to this podcast knows that there's not necessarily a right or wrong way to do it. There's, you know, fabulously very, very successful teams with KW, with EXP, with Real, with Coldwell, blah, 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 blah. And then there's really successful, you know, teams that have gone independent like you have. What was your story about why you decided to go out on your own?
Yeah. And I have only amazing things to say about Keller Williams. That was the only really firm I've ever been with. They're absolutely fabulous when it comes to training, support. You know, I still have a lot of amazing friends from Keller Williams, so nothing negative to say. But just as I am profitable in my business, that the reason why I'm profitable in my business is because I know my numbers. And so when I started to dig into, well, how much are we paying out and what is that getting us? That's when it was like, wow, this doesn't make sense. So, you know, that year in the business where our numbers were way less, we were spending about $85,000 that year paying it out to the firm. And of course, the more volume you do, the sure. more money that would sure. go to the firm. And, you know, I just was looking at the big picture of, well, what are we getting for $85,000? You know, if we stepped away, would we lose business? You know, also, and this didn't happen often, but sometimes I would go on a listing presentation and I would start talking about myself, about my team name, and then I would start bragging about Keller Williams and the firm. And it's happened a handful of times where they immediately were stopped and they said, oh, because they had a bad experience with another Keller Williams agent in the past. So then I had to almost, you know, compensate for, you know, well, no. Keller Williams has, you know, hundreds of thousands of agents all are different. So, you know, I realized that, you know what, I don't know if that big name brand is really helping me in the business. You know, people want to work with me and work with my team because of us and our brand. So that's why I decided to make a move. But again, absolutely adore and love Keller Williams. But for us, it was a great move and business continued to just, you know, elevate from there.
Yeah. It sounds like at a certain point of scale in your business, for some people, it just makes sense to go out on your own. It's simply about the numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. It was strictly numbers. You know, I didn't have any type of investments or anything within Keller Williams, you know? Ancillary business connected them. So there was no ties that I had within Keller Williams. So, and I also, you know, me, I'm one of those people, I come into the office, I want to get my work done, I want to focus on my team. And honestly, being in a large brokerage, I am a helper all the time, happy to answer questions, open book. But I found I was spending more of my day helping outside agents outside of our team. And right, so it was right. taken away from right. my team. And that's a struggle too. Again, you know, open book, people can call me at any point, always happy to help. But I just wasn't able to get my work done that I need to for my team. So the separation was best to, hey, let's go and start our own office.
Yeah. I mean, you can have an abundance mentality up to a certain point, but at that point, you kind of have to put your own oxygen mask on before you can help
exactly.
others. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So we started just shutting our door all the time, but then it looked like we're closed off and we're not being team players. And that's not a good feeling either. So, but yeah, again, love Keller Williams. Nothing bad to say at all about them, but it was a great move that we made in 2016 to go off and be independent.
Yeah. I mean, obviously in hindsight, it's worked out for you, right? So, okay. So in 2016, you decided to go fully independent, start Acol Realty, your own brokerage. Did you ever draft like a formal business plan where you have like a 20-page document and it's laminated in a binder and you're like, here's our growth milestones we're going to hit in years 1 and 3 and 5. And I mean, did you have a fancy business plan?
I still don't
have
that.
Okay.
I'll be honest with you.
It kind of just evolved.
I mean, I'm just one of those people that if we don't do, I guess, better than what we did last year, that's when I feel like we're failing. Even though the numbers, I know people are like, wait, you're still doing amazing numbers. But to me, as long as we are doing a great job servicing our clients, there is no reason why we shouldn't have enough repeat business and referrals from them to do more business next year, right? As long as we're running a good business model. So I don't have even a year, 3 year, 5 year goal now. I just want to see us always growing. And also, I think it's hard, personally, I find it's hard to you know, plan this business model or what I want, because really what I want is dependent on what the agents and the team want. You know, prime example, one of our, you know, one of our first agents on our team who is still with us, and she joined us like a good 7 to 8 years ago. At that time, I mean, she was closing 50 homes a year. Like, that's where she was at in her life. Well, fast forward now, and you know, everyone's lives change. And so now, I mean, she's happy if she closed 12 a year, and that's okay. So I'm saying that to say that, like, you know, I have to shift my business model based upon what my agent's goals are as well. So, you know, I'm always growing, learning. I like to open up new ancillary businesses, if I can speak, you know, but I don't have really like, okay, in 5 years, this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
Just never been one of those people. I don't know.
So you got going in 2016. Maybe you don't know this number off the top of your head, but let me ask you, approximately how many transactions was your team doing in 2016, right before you actually went off independent? Were you doing 50 transactions a year, 100? Where was it at then?
No, we were closer. I want to say we were probably closer. I think we're like 170 or so, like right under the 200 mark.
Okay, so you had already built a very large, successful business even before.
Right? Maybe a little bit lower, maybe the 140s. Yeah, so I mean, it was definitely over 100, no doubt about it, because whenever we made the transition, myself and I think three agents were on the team at that point. So I would say, yeah, probably easily, you know, maybe 150.
And were you still in production at that time? Or when did you officially get out of actually still buying and selling homes?
Yeah. So from the first hire of another agent, I 100% got out of the buy side. I was strictly on the list side. And then that agent who was still with us was strictly on the buy side. I even had one situation where a referral was sent to us, and it was a luxury referral. And that agent said, if you don't work it, unfortunately, I just don't feel comfortable. I'm going to send it to someone else. So I worked it, but I still gave the split to my agent. You know, I'm going to be fair. Like, that was not my lead. It shouldn't have been my lead. It should have been yours, even though I had to service it. So as soon as I hired my first buying agent, I was strictly on the listing side. Fast forward, and I officially stepped out of production in June of 2020. Okay. I tried stepping out of production before then, and you know, it just didn't work. Our business started to just go downhill a little bit because, again, I was the main listing agent at that point, and I had two other listing agents that started getting revved up. But it just started to taper off. So I got back in really quickly. Well, fast forward to June 2020, that's when I was pregnant with our twins, and I had to go on temporary bed rest. And it kind of was like, you know what? Perfect timing. It was almost a forced decision, but I was ready. And so like, how are we going to make this happen? And yeah, it's been great. So my last listing appointment was June of 2020. That year I still closed like 70 listings. I can't give myself all the praises. We have amazing support within our team that handle everything on the back end and all the marketing and whatnot. Stepped out June of 2020. And with that, net-wise, I still continue to grow every year, which is neat.
Wow. So even after removing your own production where you were doing 60,
which is scary, right? Because normally it's like, oh, I get 100% of this versus splits are 35, 65, 65 to the team on the listing side. You know, I only get 65%, and it's not Angie getting 65, you know, after paying $20 billion expenses. Yep. But still, that's a little scary. And I actually expected for, you know, my profitability net wise to go down some. And I was okay with that if it was giving me time back, you know, because with having twins and I already had two other kiddos, you know, I couldn't work evenings and weekends anymore. So it just didn't work with my schedule. Knock on wood, we did all the right things and, you know, business continued to increase and profitability did as well.
So I think that's a really interesting observation that you started to build your team. Was it in 2013, right?
October 2013. Yep.
Okay. So 2013 and your last official year of being involved in production yourself was 2020. So it was really like a 7 year transition to where you're kind of gradually transitioning out of being the person buying and selling homes and you're really becoming the CEO of the business. So it's not like that happened in just 6 months or even a year or two. It took 7 years, but now you've built something where truly a business exists independent of you and it's making money without your personal time going out on listing appointments, showing homes. Like Acol Realty makes money without Angie Cole selling homes. That's a huge, huge, huge mindset shift that a lot of agents never quite escape that they're just trading, you know, time for dollars.
Yeah. And I hear this all the time and I felt like this at one point is, well, you know, clients only want to work with me. And that's BS, guys. Like the client does not care who they're working with as long as they're, you know, being taken care of. And we have that same discussion with our agents, especially agents that have been in the business, but always handled everything 100% from like contract to close. Well, they join our team and now they have a closing manager. So it's really hands-off. And some people have trouble letting go because they're like, the client will only want to work with me. I can't imagine handing them off to a closing manager. But it's always funny. We, you know, close out the home, testimonials come across. And I jokingly always said this when I used to go on listing presentations. I was like, you know, I was the one who just sold their home 20K above listing price, but they didn't give me the 5-star review. They gave it to my closing manager, you know, but that speaks volume because again, the client doesn't care if Angie's helping them. They don't care if Melissa, whomever is helping them. They just want to be taken care of, right? So it's learning to also let go and also understanding that I'm not best at everything. We have many like internal, you know, roles and leadership and, you know, those roles, those people excel in those roles and they do it a lot better than I do.
Yeah. And often it's a failure of team leaders to build up the brand and the prestige of the agents on their team, because often it's all about them. And it was like, well, if you're making your marketing all about you, of course, people are going to want to work with you
because
they're actually responding to the incentives that you're putting out into the world.
Yes. Yep. That's so true. Like my face is not on our for sale signs. Our face is not on our car. Like no marketing includes Angie Cole. As far as, you know, we really want to focus on the brand, the logo, the name of the company, because I don't want our agents to have to overcome that objection that, oh, well, we only want to speak with Angie. Of course, that still happens from time to time, but a lot of people just, they don't even know that I exist. And that's okay. Like, I don't need to be the face of the company.
She's a myth. Is Angie Cole even a real person?
Right. Exactly. That's okay.
So let's dive back into some of the numbers quick and kind of just dissect how you got to where you're at. So you sold how many transactions? Was it 500?
Like 517 in 2022.
Okay, 517. The volume was right around 225 million.
225, uh-huh.
And your team now has 60 plus people overall. What is the breakdown of how many of that 60 plus are agents versus ISAs versus admin staff? Can you give me a quick breakdown of what that looks like?
Sure. We have three ISAs. We then have, as far as admins, we have, I'd say like 3.5 closing managers, half because the other one, she does a million other things. We have a listing manager. We have now a director of growth. So she strictly recruits. That's her job, to attract new agents to our company. We have a director of operations. We have a part-time administrative lady who does things and just anything and everything we need. We have a virtual assistant who helps us on the back end with, you know, data entry or, again, anything that's needed. Those are the main, I would say, administrative side. So there's about, I think, 12 to 15, or actually we also have, I left some people out, I'm sorry. We have two full-time mentors, okay? So what they do is any of the new agents that join, they're teamed up with a mentor and they're babysitting them for the first 5 transactions. And then we also have like a main agent accountability, kind of agent manager who runs the agent department. So all in all, I'd say we have around like 12 or so salaried employees. I think it's 15 if you include the ISAs, but you know, they're mainly bonus structured. And then as far as agents, I think we're upwards of around 55 agents or so. So actually, I guess we have more than like 65, maybe we're up in 70, 75 people or so.
Okay. And without giving literal exact dollar figures, because I understand that you have to protect privacy a little bit, what are you paying your admin staff in terms of hourly rate or salary? Just so people listening can kind of get an idea of what your monthly payroll looks like, with that large of a team.
Yeah. So, payroll last year, I think ran us around like $450,000, for the year.
Okay.
So, you know, when it comes to admin staff, you know, I would say it's anywhere between the 40s. But, you know, my lead admin makes six figures. So it really depends on the role, how long they've been with the company, what their responsibilities are.
And that's, is that the director of operations or?
Yes, our director of ops. And then, you know, she's also helped to, you know, our director of ops has been with us for over 5 years, started off as a closing manager. One of my best friends now too. Absolutely amazing. And beyond though, just her salary, she has done an amazing job with building her referral business too. Last year, I want to say she made $20,000 to $25,000 just on work in her sphere, because we don't allow admin to like double dip or any roles to double dip. And so admin can't work in production as well, even if it's their best friend. But from work in her sphere, she handed off a lot of buyers and sellers that closed and made, I think, $20,000 to $25,000 in bonuses on top of her salary.
And I think that's really important to point out that, you know, at a certain point, everyone has this kind of dream, I think, of, oh, I could build a team and pay everyone $30,000 a year and there'll be so much profit. It's like, well, if you want to get quality people, you have to pay quality compensation.
Yeah.
And so you have someone on your team who's, you know, your director of ops and they're making over $100,000 a year. Most agents, absolutely. Most agents, I think, just don't have the courage to have someone on the payroll who's making over $7,000-$8,000 a month because they think, wow, even if that person's not directly selling anything, they still make that much. I mean, if your payroll last year was $450,000, that means that you're basically at the point where almost $40,000 a month is going out to your team and they're not responsible for actually selling any houses. That's just your expenses of salaried employees. Now, what is the marketing budget on top of that? Because I'm assuming that you do some sort of marketing or lead gen to sell over 500 homes a year.
Yeah. Marketing budget. We're averaging typically around like $30,000 a month is where we're at in marketing. And, you know, it's kind of back and forth where, okay, is it internet leads? And then, hey, how much do we like love on our past clients? So we're always like tweaking where that money is going. But I would say straight out of the gates, marketing as far as lead generating from, you know, online leads, I would say we're upwards of $30,000 or so a month. That includes like radio, any print materials we do as well, but yeah, 30,000.
What's a quick, again, just approximate breakdown of like where that 30,000 is going? Like how much is going to Realtor or Zillow? How much you mentioned radio, just approximately?
Yeah, so where we're at right now, radio is $500 a week for our segment. With Realtor.com, we're at now 6,000 a month. Zillow, we're around 5,000 to 6,000 a month. Google pay-per-click, we're at around 15,000 to 17,000 a month. Other sources, we do the local ad services. You know, we have a threshold up to 2,000. We'd be happy to spend a lot more on that because those are amazing leads. If you're ever thinking about a lead source,
the local
ad services are fabulous. But there's just not enough leads coming in to even meet that threshold. What are some other main things that we do? Here and there we do postcards, you know, but then we are big also on loving on our past clients. So client appreciations, we just sent out for March, we sent out scratch-offs, you know, pretty much like hope you're the lucky one, you know, we're so lucky we've been able to work with you in the past, you know, so we're always loving on our past clients as well to try to work that business to stay at top of mind.
And if you're listening, you can do the math on, you know, if they're spending about $30,000 a month in marketing, that's about $360,000 a year. They got 500 transactions out of that. So that kind of gives you an idea of the cost per transaction of what the marketing budget looks like. Now, how do you compensate? How do you structure the ISAs? Are they bonused with a base salary or who are they? Are they calling like the Google pay-per-click leads or are they just calling expired listings? What does that look like?
Yeah. So ISAs have free reign to work any business that they want to. They are compensated the exact same, no matter the lead source. The ISAs do also receive, they're kind of on a calendar rotation and they receive the phone calls coming into the office. But I mean, that might be 2 to 3 a day. It's not like the phone's ringing off the hooks. But the ISAs, they're paid $30,000 a year. And then they get 5% off the top of a closing that they set. And that 5% comes out of the agent side. But the agents, they love the ISA. That was business they didn't have. So that's how they're compensated.
Okay, awesome. highest paid ISA last year because of obviously the $30,000 base plus the bonus incentives.
Yeah, Reggie. Reggie was around in the 70s, I know.
Awesome. So you have ISAs that can make $60,000-$70,000.
Yeah. They can make more. Yeah. They could easily make six figures. We, Reggie, that was his first, Yeah. He's been with us now a year and a half, and Reggie's actually now our lead ISA. So he runs the ISA department. We have Alec, who has been with us now for 2 years. Alec also had a wonderful year. I think he was upwards of 60,000. And then Abigail, first year in the business last year, started I think in April, and I mean she still had an amazing year as well. So yeah, they're rock stars.
I think that's a really important paradigm shift for people listening to this, because again, they think, oh, an ISA, they probably make $30,000 or maybe $40,000 a year, right? It's like, well, yeah, I guess that's one way of doing it. But if you want to keep people and actually build a business and a brand that lasts and endures, you have to make all the positions in your company such that people actually could view it as a career. And one's going to stay in something long term if the most they can ever make is $35,000 a year.
Well, in an ISA role, you know, it's sales, right? It's just like an agent. Like, there is no limit or cap to how much money they can make. And, you know, the more they build that pipeline, it will come back to them. One of our ISAs, Alec, last year, he, from a phone call he took off of a Google local ad service call, ended up being a buyer, connected with one of our agents, bought a $4.2 million home. And so when you do the math on that, 5%, he made like $8,400 bonus. I mean, that's larger than a commission check that most agents make.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, there's great opportunity for them as well.
Just for setting the appointment.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's great too, because it's a happy medium. All three of them have no desire to be an agent. They said, you know what? I love my evenings. I love my weekends. I love just being able to shut off the day, but I do enjoy lead generating, talking with clients, but I don't have to be at the forefront. I don't need to be out there in the field. I get enough out of the relationship building just over the phone. So they're doing what agents should be doing anyways, but they have no desire to work a lot of weekends, work a lot of evenings. So they're kind of, it's a happy middle ground where they can still make a wonderful income, but they also have control of their schedule.
Yep. And by the way, as we're talking about all of these, you know, all of these marketing initiatives and what the business structure looks like, I want to make it clear to everyone that Angie does not work with platform marketing right now. So I don't want to indirectly in any way take credit for Angie's business, because most guests on the Platform Marketing Show are actively clients of platform marketing. Angie is not. So I want to make that really, really clear. We don't really work with large teams. Platform is more specifically for individual agents or people who have like really small teams, like usually less than five. So I just want to add that disclaimer to this episode that if you're listening to this, Angie does not work with platforms. So I don't want to take credit for you building
this.
But
Tim is amazing and platform marketing is amazing as well. So
we try.
There's my plug.
So you've built it to this point now where there's, you know, 500 plus transactions a year. You just mentioned work-life balance. So I kind of want to double click on that. For you personally, you know, now that you're really 10 years into building, I guess this is your 10th year with the team. What is your work-life balance look like? What does an average day look like for Angie Cole? Are you working nights and weekends? How many hours are you putting in? Like, what does that look like at this stage of the business?
Sure. Yeah. Normally I'm not working nights and weekends, right? But at any point as a business owner, things can shift. My typical day is, you know, drop off kiddos at daycare. My husband takes the oldest to high school, and I make my Starbucks run, and I am in the office by 8:30, 8:45 at latest. And then I typically work until 5:30 before I go and pick up the kiddos, but I'm done with work and I don't work evenings. I don't work weekends. Now, if someone calls me and they need something like an agent, you know, kind of a fire drill, I always answer the phone. But the great thing about our team and our organization is agents always actually have someone else to call. I'm the last person they call. They know whom else to call, and those leadership roles are fabulous with stepping in. So I don't work evenings or weekends anymore for the most part. With that being said, though, I also have a couple of other businesses, property management business. We have, I'm partners in a title company, and then we have an insurance company. And unfortunately, with our property management company, in the last month and a half, we had to make some changes, and it was a disaster. And, you know, as a business owner, it's like, you have to fix all the problems. So in February, I felt like the world was falling apart for a minute. I was working nonstop every weekend for 4 weekends straight. I had to get sitters, and so I could come to the office and focus on the financials. So, you know, I know some people say it like, oh, yeah, you're living the great life, right? You don't work evenings and weekends. But, you know, first of all, I used to put in 10 to 12 hour days every day for the longest time when I was, you know, newer in the business. Okay. So I did my time. But then still, you know, as being a business owner, there are times where you have to step in and you're the only person that can fix things. So I went through that in February. Talk about stress, but, yeah. You know, you eventually always come up on top. But I'm back to not working evenings and weekends anymore, which is nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's never going to be black and white where it's I never work evenings. I never work weekends, but as an entrepreneur, I think it's about what's the exception and what's the rule. Like, is it when I do have to check something out on a weekend, is it truly the exception or is it more of the rule? And you've obviously built a work-life balance where if you ever have to check something at 8 p.m. or at 10 a.m. on a Saturday, that's truly the exception.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I'll be honest with you, like, I love the business. Like, I am one of those people, my mind's like always spinning and I'm always thinking about, okay, how can we tweak this? How can we make this better? What can be improved? And so instead of like sitting there watching TV, instead I'm on my phone and playing around and like resharing social media posts from our team members, like just, you know, hey, let me create this graphic and give someone a shout out. So, you know, I just, it doesn't bother me to work, if that makes sense. Like I don't like when I feel forced and I'm in the weeds, get things done. But naturally I love seeing the business excel. I love seeing our team members grow and hit their goals. And so, I love working.
Yeah. So, I think any entrepreneur is the same way, because if you build your business to that point, you have to admit deep down, you like it at least a little bit, right?
Yeah, right,
I mean, it's hard to turn your brain off.
I don't think anyone should be in any career because it's just strictly for the financial side of things, for the money. Like, you need to enjoy walking in the door every day and get excited.
And speaking of the money, what was the total revenue or GCI of the overall team last year doing a $225 million sales, and about, you said it was 517 transactions?
Yes. So we were at, and I'm pulling my numbers. We end up, I think it was over, it was 5.6 million total GCI.
Okay. And what is your goal profit margin that's left over after all that? Because obviously you said you're spending over $30,000 a month on marketing. Your actual payroll is like $40,000 a month. So, I mean, really, every single month.
As far as like what my goal as far as take home to be?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what a breakdown, I mean, percentage wise, but I mean, I'm open about my numbers. You know, I walked away with like 1.4 last year. And, you know, I think the exciting thing about that is that also included paying myself $100,000 salary that was rolled in as being an expense. That's paying for my car. That's paying for my cell phone, a lot of dinners. So, you know, a lot of, I guess, kind of personal expenses went into, you know, the profit and loss statement as well. So.
And I'm assuming you're probably set up as an S corp then in how you.
Yes.
Okay. So that's really important. And I'm glad you were willing to share that after all this, you know, cause you have 30,000 marketing, 40,000 in payroll. I'm sure there's other expenses like, you know, office rent and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're spending a lot of money every month, 70, 80,000 plus before a single dollar comes in terms of GCI.
Yeah. I mean, I know our numbers recently when I looked at them, we must close 30 homes a month to even break even. So in order for me to pay all the expenses of the business, we must close 30 homes a month.
And that's assuming what the average transaction being worth what, 10,000 or 8,000, 7,000?
I was going to say, around 10,000, like commission check total.
So, so really you have to be bringing in $300,000 every month
Correct.
Just to break even.
Correct.
So again, when an agent hears this, I hope your reaction is, if I'm not willing to play in that sandbox and play at that level, maybe I shouldn't build a team. Because often when I interview agents, and I'm talking with them about their future growth plans, they're like, oh, I'm going to build a team. I'm going to start building a team. Sure. And 9 times out of 10, I try to talk them out of it because they never really think through what will it actually take to succeed with that business model. Because building a team isn't necessarily better than not building a team. It's just, it's different. It's a completely different type of business model. And if you're happy as an individual producing agent, you love real estate, you love being a successful agent, maybe you're making $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year.
Amazing.
I just want to say, like, as explicitly as possible, the next step, and I'm using my hands right now to make like air quotes, the next step is not necessarily building a team.
Yeah.
Because it's a different business model entirely. It's not necessarily better. So if that scares you, the idea of I have to bring in $300,000 every month or else we're losing money.
It is scary, you know, like especially when the market shift hit us in October of 2022, you know, and I had to make a decision and I said, you know what, every single person on our team is more important to me than a paycheck. So Angie Cole in October lost $70,000. In November, I lost $50,000. And in December, I made $7,000. So, you know, it's not all just, I mean, there's, it ebb and flows and you have to dial in and be all in. But, you know, again, part of having a team is the leadership side of things. And each individual on our team means a lot more to me than me making an extra dollar, because you know what, like I have the responsibility of putting food on their table and providing for their families as well. And I told them all, I said, you guys are slow, so you better get to work and find something else to do in here, right? If I'm gonna keep paying you, but I am going to figure out a way to continue to pay you. You know, now if this goes well into 2023, we unfortunately might need to like revisit things, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Like we made the right changes. We got tighter on our marketing, you know, and weeded out things that were really just, you know, throwing dollars out the door. But I would say going back to like growing or building a team, I see where most fail is you're now putting on your leadership hat. And so, you know, just because you are amazing working with clients and selling homes doesn't mean that you'll be an amazing leader. You know, dealing with emotions and just making strong decisions and really always looking for like what's best for the overall organization and not what's just best for me. So I tend to find those that try to build a team that fail, it's because the main breadwinner was not a great leader.
And that was actually going to be my next question is when you look at people building teams, that's great. I was going to say, what is the number one mistake that you see people making? But you already answered that. So let me actually pivot from that and ask maybe a more personal question. What is the biggest mistake that you have made in the last 10 years of growing A Cole Realty where you think back and like you say, you know, you think, oh, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah. I would say, two things. And I feel like I constantly have to remind myself of this. One is always know your numbers. Okay. You know, like already actually, I mean, we're into March and I have not looked at my numbers closely for this year, which is not a smart thing. You should be scrubbing and looking at your numbers every single month and know, okay, this lead source, this is how profitable it was, you know, because for example, like realtor.com leads for us in 2021, we killed it. We were super profitable. 2022, we just broke even. And so just overnight, certain lead sources can change and for your individual market. So always know your numbers, know what's working. Because again, there's no point in working hard and being in the business if you're not profitable. So know your numbers. And then I would say second thing that I've learned and I'm constantly working on, and it's more from the leadership side of things is, you know, when you're running a team or a business, you are going to have a lot of different opinions, a lot of different emotions, you know, a lot of different personalities. And I can find myself feeling like I'm being attacked when someone else gives their opinion or they don't like a change we're making. And so I have learned to, and I always have an open door policy, I've learned, hey, tell me how you feel, but I don't need to react immediately. let me stop, let me think on that, and let me get back to you. So just don't be reactionary, because that can really get you in trouble. You could handle the overall situation incorrectly, maybe say things you shouldn't have said and hurt someone's feelings. And you really just need to, sometimes it's okay, just say, you know what, I don't have an answer for you, but I'll get back in touch with you. And I find myself doing that a lot more versus giving them an immediate response.
So let me ask a kind of open-ended question here. If you were to move to a different city where you did not know anyone and you were truly starting from scratch over again, where you didn't have the team, you didn't have all the admins and all of this like infrastructure around you. Let's say you move to Topeka, Kansas, where you do not know a single person. And you're like, my goal is to become a top agent and build another A-Cole Realty in Topeka, Kansas. What would be the things you do in the first 6 months to get that snowball rolling if you're going to become a successful agent and then build a team there? Like if you were starting over from scratch, what would you do differently?
Yeah. I mean, I 100%, I would get right back into production. I feel like me as an individual, I need to be productive. I need to find the clients and build the basis of the business before I can start adding. And I see that's another like mistake I see a lot of people make is they say, oh, I just want to have this team. But they individually, you know, don't even know what they're doing. Like you have to first, you know, luckily I have all of our systems in place so I could carry that over. But going into a very new market, I need to learn the market. I need to get actively out there in production, make sure I have all my systems set up, you know, be super present on social media. Social media is huge. And honestly, I'd stop popping into like every local restaurant, boutique, whatever it is, and introduce myself, just get in front of people. So I would start off as an individual agent. My goal wouldn't be to hire until I have the leads and the business coming in that I can then hand off. So you need to make sure that you have the structure, the systems, the leads to be able to support those team members. Otherwise, why would they be attracted to you?
Okay. Okay. All right. I lied. Here's the last question. How do you structure the comp for your agents in terms of commission splits with the team? Is it different if it's a Sphere lead versus a lead gen lead that A-Cole Realty generated with the ISAs? Like, what does that look like in terms of how you structure commission splits on your team?
Yeah. So actually everyone starts the same and all lead sources are the exact same. So buy side is 50-50, list side is 35 to the agent, 65 to the team. If the ISA sets an appointment, it's 5% off the top that comes out of the agent portion. Now, the more units they close with us, their split will jump up. So once they close 50 units, it jumps up by 2% in their pocket. And then for every additional 50 units, an additional percent. So at max would not exceed a 10% jump. So again, no matter what the lead source is, it's the splits are the same.
Okay. And who are maybe two or three of your top earning agents? Like what can they actually make at A-Cole Realty?
Yeah. Alex Harder is our lead agent. He's been with us for about 4.5 years now. Last year, he made 400,000 plus. The next one in line, Courtney Aiken, she made like 350,000. Next one made close to 300.
So agents on your team in this model are making $300,000-$400,000 a year.
Yep. Yep.
I think
they worry about themselves and their clients. No expenses out of their pocket. They pay their gas, their phone bill, their taxes, computer. That's it.
Yeah. Cause you obviously have a whole team of admin, ISAs, closing managers, marketing people. I mean, even mentors on the team. I think my biggest takeaway from this conversation with you this morning, Angie, is that even inside of this team structure, you have people making $300,000-$400,000 a year as agents. You're paying your top director of operations a six-figure salary.
Yeah.
You are not cheaping out on any of these positions. And that's why you've achieved scale.
Yeah. No, I mean, the company would not be what the company is if it wasn't for them. 100%.
All right. Well, Angie, I know that you have to hop off to another meeting now. So thank you for your time. This was an incredible episode and let's talk soon.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.